from Parker, Colorado.
Morning, everybody. I'm Gary. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be here. Glad to be sober. y'all are going to be so sick of me by the time this is over. And tonight, it's this is called a whistle stop tour, kind of like. Thanks, Derek, for asking me to come to Atlanta and share myself with each and every one of you. It's my hope that I'll have a chance to at least greet everybody before it's over. Some of you I've been able to spend a little more time with. We've broke bread and all kinds of food products. And I feel like I've known you all my life. And I guess in some sense, in the sense of the Spirit, I probably have. You've probably known me your whole life too. There's a little bit of good in everybody. And there's probably just a little bit of bad in everybody too. But there has to be something that transcends everything, and that is, I think, the power that is found by accessing God through the 12 steps initially. And then taking this thing whole in all its dimensions as a way of life, as literally as a way of life. This is not for people that are timid or weak of spirit. Sobriety is infinitely more difficult than drunkenness. Infinitely more difficult. It's easy to knock them back. You open them up and you pour them down and it does its magic. Wouldn't it be great if that's the way AA worked? But it doesn't. And again, I just kind of some upfront stuff. I'm an alcoholic. That's what I am. I almost in this day and age feel apologetic for that. God, I did not see how you could improve on two-fisted drinking, personally. But I had every part of me busy doing that, and I didn't have time for a lot of the other stuff. I realize there's a lot of stuff out there. AA has realized that for a long time, and as a result, Alcoholics Anonymous has given its 12 steps and 12 traditions to 228 different anonymous programs. 228, the last I heard. There might be a few more now. We did not grant approval to an outfit called We Hate Alcoholics Anonymous Anonymous. For obvious reasons, why would they even want our steps? We never did figure that one out. When that came through, everybody kind of had that curious look. You know, it was like, what the hell is this? And but we've given our principles or our steps, which embody principles that are universal, to 228 different fellowships. Most of those fellowships started around 1978 to 85. That's when the big push was on. There's a lot of people that speculate why that happened. It's probably due to the landscape at the time. The treatment industry started basically, as we understand it today, started around 1970 as a consequence of a little thing called the Hughes Bill. The Hughes Bill came out in 1968. It was sponsored through the Senate by one of our illustrious members who was sober about a minute. And his name was Harold Hughes. He was a senator from Iowa. And he sponsored this bill, and basically what the bill said, and it's voluminous, but what it said was, we got to do something about these alcoholics. They're on the streets. We'll get them off the streets, get them into these, they didn't really know what to call them, facilities, and sober them up and then let AA or whatever do its work. That was the essence of it. Of course, it took a little bit for the public to figure out how they were going to approach this problem. And so by 1970, the treatment industry, as we knew it, started. And AA was bebopping along, growing about 6-7% a year, selling about 6-7% increase in big book sales. Groups were growing at that about same ratio until about 1971. And that was the year Bill died, and it was also the year when the logarithmic growth in Alcoholics Anonymous occurred. Starting in 1971, if the ramp was 5 to 6% a year, it just shot up over the moon. In 1 year, I think in 73, we actually doubled the number of groups in the U.S. and Canada. Now, a lot of things happened out of that that created some situations which we today are now dealing with. AA, you know, nothing happens fast in AA. Boy, no kidding. We're now reacting to what was going on in the 70s, basically. 1976, a company called the Rand Corporation wrote a report, a research paper, basically said that some alcoholics could be taught to drink socially. So we had a little dip in the membership in 1976 as a result of that paper. In 1978, the situation got so bad that Rand Corporation had to print a retraction to that statement, because apparently a lot of people thought they were a social drinking alcoholic, and they were dying like flies. So then it started ramping back up again until 1991. And in 1991, two of our illustrious AA members who had served in Vietnam in the armed forces and had gone past nearly the 20-year period for getting to use their veterans benefits were denied VA assistance in going to college to retrain. So they sued the Veterans Administration. And this case wandered through courts for about 5 years and ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court actually in 1991. The Supreme Court, in their decision denying benefits, said that for purposes of this case, alcoholism is not a disease. And 3 days after that court case hit the public, insurance companies began to deny benefits for inpatient treatment. And then it was a landslide. So the 28-day vacation-style treatment center in the Bahamas sort of mentality that existed stopped. Insurance companies were no longer paying benefits. Now, all of this is, and I want to point this out, this is all outside issue stuff. But Alcoholics Anonymous is affected by the world in which we live. Don't kid yourself. And that's part of the reason why we've given our steps and traditions to so many different modalities or difficulties. It's also part of the reason why, in my view, we have failed in our own 12-step work. During that period of time, early 70s through the late 80s, the 12-step became a lost art. It became a lost art. We no longer had to go find alcoholics where they were. We just had to sit in our fat chairs with our brass nameplates on the chair so nobody took our chair and wait for the bus to come. And they started coming. And the little group, 6-8 people sitting in a church basement somewhere making their 12 cups of coffee and circulating the basket and getting their $5, buying a big book once in a while, slapping each other on the back, had a good week, caught a big fish, life's wonderful, were overrun by clients of treatment facilities. Some of them apparently only had one bus, so they would bring everybody from the treatment facility to the meeting. And I think the old timers, I call them old timers because they were the cats that were sober at that time, I think they were kind of happy with the fact that they didn't have to go clean a guy's puke off his chest, on the one hand. On the other hand, these people that were coming didn't put no money in the basket. They drank all the coffee. They stole all the chips. And then they'd load up on the bus 2 minutes after the meeting and go back to the Laughing Academy. And that, so then they got pissed off. What the hell? Our group's getting overrun and we're having all these problems. So a lot of groups started going underground. Now, they had some kind of a show for a meeting and maybe one or two old-timers would be hanging around there. But for the most part, the cats that were sober started tunneling up, and they began to meet underground, invisible. If you didn't know somebody, there was no way you were going to get there. And that's how Alcoholics Anonymous began to fracture at that point. And you had the guys that were sitting in the basement, or, and gals. I use the word guys. I don't know why I do. I just do. There's nothing against gals. It's just, I just got no goddamn manners. It's really I'm trying to be inclusive, so just bear with me. I'll get loosened up here. I'm not even functional usually before noon. They started meeting clandestinely. They would hide out public information. If you had a PI announcement for your meeting in the newspaper, let's say, they'd start pulling them. The groups became internally focused. Internally. In AA, when you form a firing squad, you draw people circle up and point their guns inward. The safest place in that is right in the middle. Because somebody looks across and says, I don't like that son of a bitch. And that's who they, and everybody's pointing at everybody else. If you're in the middle, you're pretty safe. That's how we form a firing squad in AA. And that's a direct consequence of the focus of discussion in a meeting typically being what's wrong with AA. And this is the genesis, this fundamental difficulty is the genesis of most of the disputes that go on in most groups. We don't like what that guy's doing, we don't like what she's doing, he's hitting on her, you got all this crap going on. And everything is taken away from focusing our love, our attention, and our sacrifice at helping new people find and achieve sobriety. We forgot as a fellowship how to do 12-step work. And because this is being recorded, I'm assuming nobody here is going to honor the spirit of anonymity, and this thing's going to be all over some website somewhere. I'm going to say this right now. I do not, nor does anybody, speak for AA as a whole. So this is not definitely the opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. Most importantly, the General Service Board wishes really that I would just stay home and not come out and talk to anybody. So anyway, you get what you get. All right. I was a trustee on that board. And they probably never were so happy to see somebody go as when I left. I was there from 2003 to 2007. I served as a director on the AAWS board, which is our publishing entity, basically. And they also run the General Service Office. And I was chairman of that board for 1 year, 2005 and 6. So, for whatever reason, I probably should say this too, because it's being recorded. There is nothing that makes me uniquely qualified to say what I'm about to say over the next, it's going to seem like a lifetime to you. But I've had a broad experience with Alcoholics Anonymous at every level. But nothing separates me from you. Yeah, I've been at this a little while. Some of you have too. But I am not any different than you. And nothing, there's nobody more sober than anybody else. Okay? In 10 days of sobriety, I got all the physical sober I was ever going to get. Okay? Now, I had a lot of physical healing up to do, of course. But in 10 days, 2 weeks tops, you're as sober as you're ever going to be physically. But here's where the enemy lives. And every day I look in the mirror, I'm looking at the guy that got me where I'm at. So, I want to make that clear. Don't think for a minute that I'm coming to you from any spiritual hilltop at all. In fact, some of you, I've been watching you, and you clearly outperform me in the spiritual activity at a far greater clip than I'll ever be able to know. But I kind of am who I am, and that's all that I am, as Popeye said. So anyway, these groups are starting to meet underground. The AA meetings, quote unquote, that developed out of that were, if you had a year or two of sobriety, you were going to be outnumbered. And so the spirit of democracy rose, and people started having meetings the way they wanted to have meetings. And they were all new. So guess what they wanted to talk about? Themselves. Of course. And because the old timers, 2 years sober, three, five maybe, they were just overrun. There was no way they could, stop the avalanche. Along about 1980, give or take, 79 maybe, it became very apparent in AA circles, especially at the conference, that some of these other fellowships were going to have to start up and grow. Very simply because AA was being overrun with a lot of people that were not alcoholics. But AA was the only shop in town in a lot of places. And so what is AA's responsibility and obligation to the community in which it lives? So many groups became clearinghouses for every sort of problem and challenge that faces humanity. Alcoholics Anonymous became, in some ways, the word is diluted. I don't know that I buy that. I don't think AA itself could ever be diluted. It is what it is. But through our actions in the group, the focus shifted from taking the actions of change, which are the 12 steps out of the big book, to meeting-based sobriety. And then the mantra begins, 90 meetings, 90 days, you know, meeting makers make it, you know, all the little colloquialisms that we've developed through the AA jingo approach. And if you sit and listen in a meeting, you'll hear this repetitive staccato jingo that goes on. We call it AA speak. It's not really. It's a combination of a little bit of spirituality, a whole lot of psychiatry, a whole lot of living in right now, and here's what my day looked like. My mower wouldn't start. Whatever. And that's what it became. To where the pattern and the beat to that is immediately recognizable by people that have been in these meetings. The focus and the emphasis was on the meeting, not on taking the action of change, not on recovery. It was thought that the content of a meeting might have something to do with the chances of recovery. That's still an open question, especially some of the meetings I've been to. Clearly, nobody's home. AA in 1991 had 55,000 groups in the U.S. and Canada. In 2011, it had 55,000 groups in the U.S. and Canada. Essentially no growth. In 1989, we sold 1.3 million big books, all types. In 2011, we sold 740,000. Big book sales actually declined. The one thing that the General Service Office could not keep track of was the explosive growth in the number of meetings that were being held that were not connected to any kind of a group, or that were not a part of the service structure and had no connection to the General Service Office, or had no connection to their district or to their area. These were rogue elements that were popping up everywhere. In 2005, while I was on the AAWS board, we commissioned a study to try to keep track of it. We got 30 days into it, and there's just no way we could do it. Some of the forums changed. Some of you might recall the old, before the real advent of chat rooms, there used to be billboard services up on the computer. You subscribe, and sometime in a week, maybe your computer would catch a billboard, and people would post. And that later developed into chat rooms, where it's pretty instantaneous. Chat rooms developed during this time. Other ways of communicating began to occur. Oftentimes, groups would have meetings and the parties would separate into clusters. That's what they are. We call them cliques in AA. And they would start meeting in basements of different people's houses and perform different activities. Maybe they were managing to organize a hayride for the group. And then on the other hand, maybe they were sitting down and trying to study the book and see what was in there. And everything in between, okay? So all of this was going on at or about the same time during this essential flat period of basically no growth in Alcoholics Anonymous. For your information, I am not a believer that bigger is better in AA. I think AA works best at a very, very intimate level. This is almost too much, really, to try to do what we're trying to do. The best way this works is where small groups of people do get together and they really, really get at the heart and soul of this material. Whether it be the steps, traditions, whatever part of it you want to investigate. And this is how we learn. There's much more capacity for honesty and a level of commitment when there's an intimacy involved. And I don't want to confuse the word. Intimacy does not mean hooking up. It means ours is the language of the heart, folks. Ours is not the words that are spewing out of my head right now. Ours is the language of the heart. And this is where we touch each other, is in the heart, in the soul. And it's a language that only another alcoholic will understand. There's no way. You try this with your psychiatrist. It fades. It sort of lacks depth and weight. But on the other hand, armed with the facts about ourselves, having a book, we can generally gain the confidence of an alcoholic in a few hours. And I've had that experience repeated time after time in my life. And I'm certain it's happened maybe to you at least once or twice. So you get a sense of what the importance of the two liars sorting the truth out is. That's what we do. Sometimes there's three or four of us and that makes for a lot more work, but first liar ain't got a chance there. My concern with the lack of measurable growth, and I'm not convinced, again, folks, I'm not convinced that it's not that we're not growing, leads into the second legacy, which is the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous. The first tradition says, basically, our common welfare comes first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Most of us have the chance to recover as a result of going to a group, which in the fifth tradition is a spiritual entity, meaning it's a 168-hour-a-week operation. One of the things a group does is hold meetings. It's only one thing it does. There are many other things that it's involved in. It is a living, breathing thing composed of its elements. The elements are you and I. We're a member of that group when we declare it a home group. That's our group. That's where we belong. That's where we show up. I don't care. You better have a note from a doctor if you ain't going. That's where we commit ourselves. That's where, when I show up every week, I know people are looking me over. The new ones are looking to see, is this guy for real? Or is he just another phony in Alcoholics Anonymous who doesn't live this way, talks a good game, but he don't walk the walk? It is, for many of us, the first time we have any hope at all, is watching the sober examples ahead of us. See? And then one day it's our turn. And nobody's ready for that day. Nobody's ready for that day. They'll start looking at you and say, what are we going to do now? And your first inclination is to duck for cover. Nobody wants that responsibility. Well, guess what? It's your turn in the barrel. And it can happen to you 6 months sober. It can happen to you 20 years sober. But at some point, you're going to be held accountable for your actions and for your beliefs and for the quality of your sponsorship in the eyes of others. And it's a burden that many of us can't bear. We just can't bear. we fold up like a dirty lawn chair and go to the house and we say, I can't do it. And I'm going to respond in this way and say, yes, you can. Because you're not alone in this. You'll have the God of your understanding to help you, and you're going to find out what kind of God you got. It better be the top shelf kind and not that bottom shelf four roses whiskey kind. It better be top shelf. And if you haven't got that, it's time to turn the corner. I believe that everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous at some point in the game has to turn the corner where this thing ain't about you anymore. You've done had your shot, and clearly it was not a success. This is going to be about what you can contribute to the mainstream of life. It's going to be about what you contribute to the health and welfare of your fellows. And your fellows, folks, are going to be fellows in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the arena of your life. That's where it's going to play itself out. And I got some other bad news for you. I just want all the bad news out. You'll never be normal. You'll never be normal. You're not wired to be normal. And you can't change your wiring. But you can change the actions that come out of that wiring. You can change those. The fifth step says, the nature of our wrongs. The nature of our wrongs. You can't change your nature, but you can change the nature of your wrongs. I see a lot of people trying to flail away at changing their nature, and I think it's a hopeless exercise. Okay, so let's just assume, for example, that AA is growing, as measured by population that we can't measure. We don't know. Last night, I'll guarantee you, there were a bunch of people that were members of Alcoholics Anonymous that this morning are not. And this morning, there were a lot of people that had no idea that by tonight, they're going to be members of Alcoholics Anonymous. They got no idea. So we're a very fluid society. We move around a lot, especially after we get new sober. And if you got to pick up an AA, I'm sorry. You're now the part of the moving committee. The best thing you can do, I guess, is fill it up with tools. Put lawnmowers, anything in there, just anything. So, you know, I'm thinking, this is a bad thing. If we assume that AA is growing, it's growing in a way that cannot be measured in any meaningful way, certainly by any statistical way. The way we measured growth in the early times based on statistical methods is poor. But because we've done it the same way so long, it has statistically it has merit. I don't know who wrote that rule, but certainly one. It's like, oh, do something long enough, it becomes part of the statistical norm. That's just wrong 80 ways. But so now we've got all these members, self-declared members, who are out there, but they are not connected to the whole of Alcoholics Anonymous. So they have no reason to believe that the first tradition is true in their life. And I can suggest to you here right now that if you can't drink the Kool-Aid on the first tradition, none of the rest of them apply. If you don't believe or are not willing to even examine whether or not your personal recovery depends upon AA unity or depends on that group, the rest of the traditions don't apply to you. So what will end up happening to you is selfishness and self-centeredness will never leave you, and you'll be one of those guys that's on the red row for the rest of your life. The red row, back in the day, we used to spray paint all the chairs in the front row over here red. That's where we set the newcomers down. If you get them there, they're fine. But if you spread them out through the room, they'll divide and destroy you. So we put them here so we can kind of quadro step them. We can get around them and do this in stereo, see? So that's really the challenge that we're up against, is how to connect the dots between all these legacies and to show you in a very meaningful way how they all relate one to another, and that there is no one legacy more important than another. Recovery is not possible without AA unity. And forgive me again, I know there are people here from Cocaine Anonymous, and presumably maybe one or two of the other anonymi. When I'm speaking of AA, I'm talking about AA, that's what I'm talking about. If you're members of one of these other fellowships or both, the application of the principle is the same in Cocaine Anonymous, in Narcotics Anonymous, in Overeaters Anonymous, Emotions Anonymous, on and on and on. Because the traditions essentially read the same in every one of them. So forgive me if I have a heavy emphasis on AA, but guess what? I'm an AA member. And I don't have any outside difficulties. Well, I have plenty, but they haven't developed fellowships for them yet. So, and my experience is in Alcoholics Anonymous. Once again, I want to point out, and I want to emphasize this point. If you, in your life, somewhere, somehow, haven't sat down with your sponsor and investigated the merits or the demerits of Tradition 1, if you don't get any further in this legacy than that, my hat's off to you. You must look at this individually and ask yourself the question, does my recovery really depend on AA unity? Let's remember a few things, though, before we begin that investigation. Let's remember that most alcoholics that I know believe in the idea of this thing was here when I got here, it'll be here when I leave. We're selfish and self-centered. That's the point. And that we're not gonna, we just expect it to be here. And there is something to that in a positive way. And the great expectancy for anybody who's fixing to go out and get a better story this afternoon can have a reasonable expectation that Alcoholics Anonymous will be here if they survive. And a lot of people will use Alcoholics Anonymous as a healing up, saving up operation. I'll heal up from that last debacle, I'll save me a little money, and I've already got one foot in the exit door. I have no intention of staying here. I'm going to suck the life out of you and everybody around you, and then I'm going to go get me a better story because I know best. I know what works for me. Clearly, you do, because, you know, so obvious to me. Okay? And there's a lot of people that are like that. So don't get all rose-colored glasses and all gilded lily on me. We're dealing with human defects of character in the worst possible form here. And this is the only fellowship or fellowships that I know of where things are held in high esteem that society shuns. For example, if you've had shock treatment, you're the king of the group or queen. I mean, there's just nothing that beats that. You know, oh, been to prison? That's worth four treatment centers at least. And the best we got to say for people that have been 6, 7, 8, I know a nurse in Denver who's been through 28 naughty nurse programs. 28! She's sober a little over 20 years now. We didn't think she'd live. The best we had to say for her on her final arrival was, you're well treated. She'd run the gas out of that car. Okay? And she's one of the best AA members we got now. Why? She's seen it all. Seen it all. Done it all. And she's uniquely helpful with other naughty nurses. Who knew? And she knows every game they play. Every charade they pull, she's done them all. More than once. Makes her chronic. Okay. So everybody's got a place. Everybody's got a role here. And her belief, and mine, and I presume some of us at least in here, is that without this worldwide fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that's held together by two things, great suffering at the hands of alcohol. And I'm not talking about, oh, dropped my cell phone on the toilet and came to AA. I'm talking about great suffering here. And the divine alchemy of a loving God that most of us getting here had no idea, did not understand. Our understanding was, we don't understand. And those are the two forces that unite us all across the world. 2 million, give or take, on Saturday night. Okay? 100,000 groups. And all of that growth's been overseas. And I can tell you right now, right very close to here, there are thousands of people suffering from alcoholism because they don't know about us. So part of the second, the legacy, the traditions, and part, certainly, of the service legacy is to make sure that they have enough information out there in a meaningful way that would let them know that AA is alive and well. Now, if we're going to say that about ourselves, let's make sure that AA is alive and well. Let's do our part to make sure AA is alive and well, okay? And our part, together with each other's parts, are what are going to keep this thing going. Okay, so that's the reason why we explore three legacies as opposed to just the recovery, which at the end of the day, folks, let's admit it, it's all about us. That's why we love writing inventory. Well, some of us do. We're obsessed with inventory. I know, I got it. Here it is. I'm up against it one more time. I'm going to write me an inventory. We're obsessed with ourselves. Obsessed. Here, let me get a little more about me in here. Some more. Well, here's some more about me. Here's some more reinforcement to my resentments. I'll put them in the fourth column. That's where they belong. You know. We love being right. But I've been wrong a bunch, a whole bunch. And I think being right's overrated. We have nothing here in our program to defend. We have nothing to protect here. God's protecting us. And how does He protect us? Through the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. It keeps society safe from us. It protects them from us. Can you imagine if we all got loose today with a brand new plant? We'd tear it up. We would tear it up out there. And they'd be going, God, just go back to your traditions and get the hell out of our hair. How about if we all reverted today? How about if we just haul in a big keg and a 4 or 5 gallons of whiskey and we just went to work? God, we would tear it up, folks. Chances of that happening are slim to none, but you always want to hold out. You never know what we're thinking, do you? And if we all start thinking alike, oh, God. So the traditions give us some suggestions. I don't call them boundaries. I don't believe in boundaries in AA. Don't believe in it. I believe you're a wide open book when you get here. If you don't have anything to defend, anything to protect, or anything to hide from anybody, you won't need no boundaries. You'll intuitively know what you have to do in any given situation, and you'll be making time for everything instead of doing time for something. I would rather spend an hour of quality time with my wife than feel like I have to do 5 hours at home because I'm guilty, because I've been gone too much, because I've been working with too many crazy idiots, because whatever the reason. I'd trade an hour of quality for 5 of quantity any day. And so I believe that in AA you can make time for everything. You may not sleep a lot, but hey, nobody ever died from that I know of. You can make time for anything. Otherwise, you're going to be doing time, and I got to tell you folks, this is really going to suck. Big pond water. It's going to suck. So, just some things to consider while you're considering this first notional idea about unity being critically important in order for us to recover. You all know somebody in your group who believes they are a large part of a small whole. They are a large part of a small whole. The tradition says we are a small part of a great whole. We're just one member this day, right now. That's all we got. A lot of people cannot get past themselves. And you'll see it happen in your group. They'll try to ramrod stuff through. Bigger, better plan. At 2 o'clock this morning, I came up with it. I know what I'm going to tell them. I'm going to go to the group and say, just don't drink today. Hell, that's the ticket. So they go to the group, 8 o'clock, everybody's tired, they had a long day. And Bubbles over there, he pops up and says, I know, this came to me in prayer and meditation. Just don't drink today. Hell, that sounds great. That's wonderful. Hey, just don't drink today. Just don't drink today. I'm okay. You okay? I'm okay. You okay? I ain't okay. Well, you gotta go. Just don't drink today is not Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous says drink. Drink, drink, drink. Drink until you know. Drink until you're sure. Drink until you're convinced. If you have any reservations, any doubts, any lurking notions, words to that effect, you're probably not toast. And many of us will die behind that. We'll die. Do not kid yourself, folks. This is a life and death situation here. We're dealing with human lives in the worst of fragile circumstances. Nobody's coming here on a hot streak. Everybody's coming here beat, bloodied, down. You got nowhere to go from there but up. Unless you want to go out and scale new canyons to new depths. And believe me, there's plenty of that out there. Plenty of it. There's plenty of bait. Rule number one, don't take the bait. No matter what it is, don't take the bait. Don't take the bait. How long have we been going? Somebody's real quick with that. All right, this is a good time. We'll take a little break here, about 10 minutes maybe, huh? Come back at 12:10, I guess it would be, huh? Sounds good.